This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here through the hour to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Do you have a question for Zorba? This is a great time to call us at 1-800-462-7413. And along with the calls, Zorba, always some interesting research to talk about.
Yes, we're going to talk about fruity cocktails and can fruity cocktails actually be healthy? The fruit in the cocktail.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about older brains. Do they benefit or not benefit from painkillers such as Celebrex, the new studies that have recently come out?
And a recipe?
Yes, it's a great recipe. Barbecued seitan sandwiches. You will love this, Tom. I promise you.
Seitan?
That's right, Tom. You'll just have to tune in to find out.
I can't wait. 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413. Zorba, a listener with us now in O'Fallon, Missouri. Hi.
Hello there.
How can we help you?
Well, I was looking for a little counsel. We have a man who just had hernia surgery, the husband and daddy in the house, and he is apparently hypersensitive to painkillers. He has tried Lortab, Tylenol Codeine 3, and the Percocet. They now have him on basic Tylenol, and he's dealing with a lot of course, discomfort from surgery, but also there's the pain and swelling. And we are looking to see if we could have some kind of guidance, maybe on some herbal remedies. Right now, the only thing he can do is Tylenol, extra-strength Tylenol, and valerian.
Very interesting. So tell me now, so what happens when he had Percocet? These are all opioids. Percocet, Lortab is hydrocodone. What sort of response did he have?
He threw up consistently for 3.5 days straight.
Oh, I don't call that a positive experience, especially
after hernia surgery. No, he ended up in the emergency room, and they pumped him full of IV fluids a couple times, several bags, just to try and get him stabilized. And they even tried morphine at the hospital, and he was ill from that.
Wow, that's really something. Now, can he tolerate ibuprofen, by the way? Can he tolerate Aleve?
No, he is allergic to ibuprofen.
What happens with ibuprofen?
His head swells up. He becomes very red, a bright red color.
Oh, that's not fun. A couple of things about this, by the way. Now, he's got a little bit of swelling there where he had the hernia surgery.
Right. There's swelling, and there's the ridge where the incision is healing. And there's general swelling around the area. It is not red or anything, and they checked it at the emergency room, and he's seen the doctor twice.
Okay. I've got a very specific suggestion, you know, that may help. First of all, you know, there's the problem, of course, Tylenol is a good drug. It does work to a certain extent with people, but it's not necessarily, you know, as good for that, you know, for pain that is more than there. But there's a patch that you can get, and the patch has, it's called a Lidoderm patch. And the patch has lidocaine right within it. In other words, it's a topical anesthetic. We use it for post-herpetic neuralgia, people who have had shingles pain. But it's been used, for instance, for people who have back pain. This is the ideal thing that would be excellent for him to use. It's only by prescription. But what you do is you get the patch. Is that your child in the background?
Yes. They're discussing who gets what.
Who gets what? How old are they?
They're 3-year-old twin boys.
Oh, and my goodness.
He also has a 9-month-old daughter who is very active, who likes to run up and jump on daddy. So he is being assaulted by surgery, children, caring wife. He is just under fire here.
He's just under fire. But come on, Daddy, I can just imagine. Let me jump on you. I'll jump right on the hernia. What you should do is call up your doctor and ask for the Lidoderm patch, L-I-D-O-D-E-R-M. And what you do is these patches can be cut, and you cut it, and you basically can put a patch over the entire thing. You can just put a patch. What you do is obviously the area where he had – did he have the hernia surgery through the scope?
So is it, or, I don't. Or did, believe so, but I don't know.
Okay,
don't...
so what he has to do is he has to put a little covering right over the area of the incision or the scope, and then he puts the patch on it, and the lidocaine will seep into the skin and undoubtedly will help reduce his pain. That's what I would recommend.
I am so glad you took our call. Thank you so much for giving us another option to find an answer here, because it's very, very difficult, and we didn't want to put the doctor on the spot anymore after seeing him a couple times, but we really appreciate the extra information.
Good.
It's our pleasure.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye. Thanks for you.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413.
You know, the lidoderm patch is interesting because this is what is called an off-label use. Here it is. The drug was approved. The drug is a patch with local anesthetic. It's approved for post-herpetic neuralgia, people with shingles pain, but it's being used for back pain, ankle pain, shoulder pain, and for some people it works, and for some people it doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
But this is a good example of an off-label use where somebody cannot tolerate an opioid. Tylenol isn't enough. Here it is. I can just picture having the pain, and he's got three young kids at home, and they hug him and they kiss him, and all of a sudden they, you know, hit him where the hernia
right.
is. It's, you know, where hernia was, rather. It's an unpleasant thing.
Let's talk about that research you mentioned,
yeah,
Zorba, into cocktails.
Yeah,
we like to talk about booze whenever we can here on the program.
Is the ultimate fruit cocktail, right? When we think of fruit cocktail, what do you think of?
I don't know, some girly drink.
Or when you think of fruit cocktail, that stuff that you get, you know.
Oh, you mean the canned fruit
in cafeterias.
Yeah,
it's got a little maraschino cherry in it, and then it has this sweet stuff, which is great.
Yeah, I don't even know what that stuff is.
What is that stuff that's in a fruit cocktail?
Is it melony kind of thing?
I have not the foggiest idea what's in there.
A lot of syrup.
That's what it is. It's a high syrup drink that really, you know, food that really is almost like a drink, which isn't very good. But here it is. They took fruit, and they added bits of alcohol. Now, this was pure alcohol. This was ethanol. This is ethanol, which is the alcohol that you find in vodka and tequila and other spirits. And they added it to the fruit. In other words, they wanted to see, was there a way to keep the fruit, the antioxidants in the fruit longer?
Yeah.
In other words, we know that vitamins, when you have fruit and it's been picked, the vitamins eventually leach out, if you will.
All right. Same
with vegetables. And they wanted to know whether in storage this would make a difference. And they took strawberries. They put the strawberries in ethanol, which was pure alcohol. They took them out and then they measured the antioxidants. And lo and behold, they found that the antioxidant activity was maintained from a fresh strawberry if they soaked the strawberry in alcohol. What do you think of that?
Well, I'm not sure what to think of it because, frankly, I'm not sure what talk about what the health benefits are.
Well, antioxidants are thought to be sort of scavengers in the body, and they wipe up and mop up the mistakes that occur that we think may lead to cancer. There's some people who believe, a lot of researchers believe, that antioxidants help prevent cancer and that fresh fruits and vegetables
have these antioxidants.
Right,
so anything we can do to boost them, they
lose them over time.
So if you connect them with, say, vodka or some other booze.
When you think about it,
then it holds the antioxidants.
Right. That's what this study shows. Yeah.
And it makes the fruit taste better, too.
And it makes the fruit taste better. So now picture this. Okay. So you've got some strawberries sitting at home, right? And then you pour a little vodka in. Maybe you're not using pure alcohol. And you let it sit there for a couple of days. And then you have these for your dessert.
Yeah. I don't remember the last time I had hard liquor. I'm talking like a drinker. So what do you
think? You have as much hard liquor as I have, but I do have a margarita now and then. That's hard liquor.
Yeah.
So, but this is interesting because we know, for instance, that teetotalers, now this is not alcoholics. Alcoholics should not drink alcohol. Remove that 10 or 15% of the population. We know teetotalers die sooner of heart attacks and strokes. We also know that the American Heart Association, which, by the way, is a bunch of puritanical East Coast snobs sometimes, I think, you know, where they just...
Okay, I'm seeing the listeners flee now. The East Coast snobbish listeners.
Sorry, I don't mean to say that. But they've been always snobbish about recommending alcohol because of the alcoholics. That's why they have been remiss in recommending that. We know that alcohol, a drink a day is okay for your heart, is beneficial, and appears to reduce heart attack and stroke. Maybe it's a strawberry soaked in vodka.
It's interesting. So there's
there
are benefits to alcohol. There are benefits to fruit.
Right.
Let's put them together. And increase the benefits totally.
Right. Yeah. And maybe this becomes the new fruit cocktail.
Got it. 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener now in Heartland, Wisconsin. Hi.
How are you guys today?
Fine. How can we help you?
This is how this story starts out.
Okay.
I scuba dive up here in Wisconsin. Cold water divers.
Wait a minute. Where do you dive? Near Heartland?
Well, we have a lake area here. We've got, we've got 6-7 lakes up here.
Okay, all right. So you scuba dive in the freshwater lakes in Wisconsin. All right.
Freshwater lakes, and then you have Lake Michigan, which is beautiful wreck diving. Some of the best wreck diving in the world because you have freshwater, and they don't deteriorate like they would in saltwater.
Yeah.
So a friend of mine I'm diving with forgot to bring his insulated boots for diving and asked to borrow a pair of mine. And he's got toenail fungus, and which brought the thought in with me that when I'm in the locker room over exercising, you see a lot of men walking around with foot thongs on also, or flip-flops.
Mm-hmm.
And my concern is, number one, are the guys, I've never really asked, but are the guys wearing their footwear in the showers in that because they're worried about foot fungus or athlete's foot? And what should you be concerned about, and what should you be concerned about catching?
Good questions. Good questions. And I have good answers.
Good
answers. First of all, you know, there's all this fear that when you walk around with bare feet in a locker room, somebody has a toe fungus, you're going to get a toe fungus. And this stuff has been going on for years. I remember when I went to school in the Chicago Public Schools, we had to walk through a broth that would help prevent fungus on our feet before we went into the swimming pool. And it was a very, I can remember nobody wanted to walk through the sort of cold broth that was sitting there, and that the idea was that this broth would actually protect fungus, and it was like a little puddle, and I can just imagine you had, 50 boys who were walking through this broth. I can just imagine how dirty it was, and they changed it like probably once every 3 to 5 days,
right.
Not very often. I mean, it was disgusting, and we all knew it was disgusting. You don't prevent that because what happens is these fungi are ubiquitous. They're all over the place. They're everywhere, and they don't invade us unless we have a problem. That's ultimately what happens. So, for instance, the problem that occurs in big toes and in other feet is that usually it's trauma. So guys often get it more than girls. Often soccer players get it all the time, football players, farmers get it because they bang themselves. So trauma produces the portal of entry to this fungus, and that's it. So in other words, you can't catch it from your buddies. You can't catch it from your friends. People walk around with flip-flops while they're walking around the locker room because they don't want to catch anything on the floor, but that's because Americans are sort of germophobics. You know, we're always afraid that there's a germ that's going to come in and destroy our body. So the fact is, it doesn't do anything.
Now, they advertise on the television, some of the pharmaceuticals do, that there is a prescription for that because I was talking to him about it.
That's
and he
right.
said, well, from what I've heard, you can take it. It's dangerous for the liver. And once you stop taking it, it comes right back again.
Well, it's not really bad for the liver. They talk about the liver. Very few people get liver side effects. Some do, but on the whole, it is not bad for the liver. It doesn't destroy the liver at all. It's safe in probably 99.9% of the people who take it. Does it come back? Yes. The comeback rate is about 20%. So 80% of the people, if they take it for 12 weeks, either daily or intermittently, are a cure. 20% are not. If you take that 20% and you retreat them again, about half of those end up being a cure. So about 10% don't have it. So that really is a treatment. Some insurance companies pay for it. Some insurance companies do not pay it for it. But the drug company that makes the drug gets the profit no matter what.
Sure.
So that's why they advertise it.
I will let him know about that.
Yeah. Now, there's another. I want to tell you, though, there's another treatment. The treatment is called Penlac, P-E-N-L-A-C. And Penlac is an antifungal toenail polish that is by prescription only. You can buy it over the internet in Canada. It'll be about one-third of the price. And you paint this on the nail it's either 12 weeks or 16 weeks. And you paint this on the nail. And that is also very effective, and it's not systemic. And it's
Penlac. Hopefully that comes in clear.
It definitely comes in clear. It definitely comes in clear. You know, I don't know if it comes in different colors, but it definitely comes in clear. Well, you have a good day there. Enjoy
Thank
your
you.
Dives. You know, I don't think of Wisconsin as a place for people to dive. I think of like Bermuda, Hawaii,
exactly.
Tropical fish. What do you see down there?
Oh, well, up here we kind of call it muck diving. You go for anchors and fishing poles and things. If you go out in Lake Michigan or Superior, you've got up to 400-foot wrecks shipwrecks up there that are fully intact.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Yeah. Oh, fully intact because it's fresh water. I got it.
Yeah.
I got it.
That, you know, it's just absolutely beautiful. Wisconsinites head down to the Caribbean and elsewhere during the winter for diving.
Well, you stay up there. Do the ice fishermen get in your way?
The ice fishermen, you know, the first thing they'll do is, what did you see down there, and where's a good spot? And then they'll move.
Oh, yeah.
Got it. So there's muck diving.
So we'll give them hot spots every now and then.
So muck diving is different from muck raking.
I guess. So pass the info along to your friend.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the call at 800-462-7413. On we go to St. Charles, Missouri. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
Sweaty feet.
Oh.
Really sweaty feet.
Hmm.
Warm heart.
You know, I was sitting here listening to you guys and stuff, waiting to talk. I could feel my feet just start to sweat. I don't know if it's nerves or what it is.
Oh, is that an attraction thing? You think Zorba and I, are? Is that a turn-on kind of thing?
I don't know if it's circulation problem or hormones or what it is. You know, it's just driving me nuts. It's to the point where everybody in my family knows that I'm kind of crazy about my feet.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, instead of somebody making your heart go pitter-patter, your feet sweat. It's a different image. It's a different poem. That's a poem that's more likely to be in The Onion than an anthology of literature. This has gone on for your whole life?
No. It first started when I had my second pregnancy, mm-hmm. and then it went away for a while. And then just when I started going through menopause, it started up again. And it's to the point now where it's driving me nuts. I mean, I got my first pedicure last year. My sister talked me into it. And I scrub my feet. I soak them in Dr. Scholl's foot soap at night. And I used to do it in the morning time. I think that's probably what it was. They were always moist, and you know, the pores weren't closed or something.
Right. No, you just produced too much sweat. Have you used dry? There's a drug called dry soap.
Yeah, and it irritated my feet. I think it's because I was scrubbing them, you know, so hard and everything, you know.
Yeah, but dry soap. Let me tell you how to do it so it won't irritate you, because dry soap really works. First of all, scrubbing your feet isn't going to do anything. Washing off the sweat with just lukewarm water. If you want to use soap, that's fine. It's all you have to do. The sweat that's on your feet is water soluble, and it comes off right away with plain soap. So you don't have to scrub it and do that. You just have to wash it, you know, pat it dry. Obviously, use foot powder, and you change your socks once or twice a day. But do you do that, by the way?
Yes, I do. Okay. I carry socks in my purse. I have 64 pairs of tennis shoes.
64 pairs?
Yeah, because I rotate my shoes and everything. I do everything, you know. And my husband says,
"You're the Imelda Marcos of tennis."
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. It's like to the point where I'm starting to have to buy them online now, because when I go in a store, everybody knows what I'm in there for.
But the way dry soap, getting back to dry soap, is it's an antiperspirant that is souped up. It's basically an aluminum compound. Some people get irritations, but let me tell you how to really keep that from happening. First of all, you start out with it once or twice a week.
Okay.
After you wash your feet, you put the dry soap on. You let it dry and you see what happens. If you tolerate it after you've done it once or twice a week for a week or two, then you go to three times a week, and then eventually you try to move yourself up to either every other day or every day. And it's very, very effective. And you can get dry soap by a prescription. If you find your skin is irritated, you need a steroid cream to use every other day with the dry soap. And what you do is you put on a steroid cream, and the steroid cream will get rid of the irritation of the dry soap.
Okay.
But the dry soap shuts off the glands that are producing the sweat. That's what it does. It's highly effective, and all you want to do is work with the doctor so that you use it on a regular basis as much as you can tolerate, and you get rid of the irritation by either not scrubbing your feet or adding a steroid cream. And believe me, this stuff really, really works. And once you get it under control, people often only have to use it once or twice a week.
Oh, okay.
So I would just use the dry soap. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
Let's grab a quick tip now, Zorba, from our Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. This comes to us from Orila in San Francisco, California. It appears that she has a tinnitus tip for us. You ready?
Ooh, a tinnitus tip.
Not too long ago, we were talking about tinnitus, and you suggested wind chimes or any other ambient noise to help with sleep.
That's right.
Well, Arila suggests a money-saving tip of turning on any radio at low volume, but setting the dial between stations.
Oh, that's right. White noise.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The result is white noise that blocks out the noise of tinnitus,
That is an old, that's an old-fashioned remedy that really works for lots of people. Good point to bring up.
Yeah.
That's a good point to bring it up. The reason why that doesn't work in our house is my wife goes, "What's wrong with the radio?" "No, honey, it's just white noise." And she said, "Well, shut it off." So obviously, what I find very pleasant, she finds disturbing. Yeah. So you've got to find whatever it is that will stimulate the cochlea upsetting you.
I would be very, very unhappy with the sound of between stations
really,
coming out of the
speaker. Well, because you're a radio guy. You're a radio guy. How about wind chimes?
No, I'm not a big wind chime.
What do you like to listen to when you go to sleep at night?
I don't listen to anything. I like quiet. Well, keep those tips coming. Send them along with questions and comments in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Lots more coming up here. We have our recipe. That's next. More of your calls, some more research, our medical myth buster. Oh, so many reasons to stay tuned here to Zorba Pasture on Your Health from PRI Public Radio International. With Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again, 800-462-7413. The number you will use if you have a question for Zorba, 800-462-7413. To the phones after our recipe, and our producer Adam Friedrich has set the recipe between us. It smells very good.
It does.
This one, Zorba, for barbecued seitan sandwiches.
That's right.
Whatever seitan is, I'm looking at it and I can smell it, but I have no idea
seitan is. It's interesting. Seitan comes from the Seiji Ozawa macrobiotic diet. The macrobiotic diet was a very popular diet in the 70s and in the early 80s. And it fell out of use because people who were strict adherents of the macrobiotic diet got scurvy. And they got scurvy because the diet did not have fruits and vegetables
no fruits
in it.
And
basically, they got a vitamin C deficiency. And we hadn't seen vitamin C deficiencies certainly in the U.S. for 100 years or 150 years. And so that diet sort of fell out of favor, and then it became an alternated macrobiotic diet, which had fruits and vegetables.
Well, tofu is soy. What is this stuff?
Well, tofu is made of soy. This is made of wheat.
Wheat.
So it's made of wheat gluten. It's called seitan. It's the wheat meat, if you will. It's the gluten. What they do is they take flour. They take the starch out of flour. What is left is gluten. The gluten is then cooked and processed in various ways. And it really is a substitute. It's a meat substitute, which will then take up flavor. Now, if you look at soy, soy takes up flavor when you have things like hamburger helper, which is a traditional in America, that really is a traditional soy extender. You mix it with hamburger and it takes it up, it takes up the taste. And it's the same with seitan. It will take up the taste of this. Very hard to get it outside of health food stores and macrobiotic stores. It's not a common thing, but it really is yummy when you add it to things.
And, Adam put this together. He used the barbecue version.
He used the barbecue version
because he
knew.
You put barbecue on anything.
He knew.
Even tofu, it would taste okay. So imagine this will taste fine. let's put it together.
So these are barbecued seitan sandwiches for the vegetarian at heart.
Okay.
Start out with vegetable oil cooking spray.
Okay, veggie cooking spray.
Right. And once again, we use those sprays because they allow us to reduce the fat that we use when we're cooking things. So things don't stick. We use the fat. They're made of lecithin, and they're actually good for us.
Uh-huh.
One medium onion diced.
Medium onion diced.
A couple of cloves of garlic, which are minced.
Two cloves of minced garlic.
1/2 medium green pepper, which is diced.
1/2 a medium green pepper diced.
And then 8 to 12 ounces of seitan cutlets. So these are cutlets, and you cut them into strips, and they come looking like a veal cutlet.
Yeah, it looks a little like, veal, or maybe pork.
Or something like that. Yeah. Uh-huh. But it's not. It's seitan.
Yeah, right.
So 8 to 12 ounce cutlets. 1/4 cup of barbecue sauce.
1/4 cup of barbecue sauce.
The barbecue sauce of your choice. What is your choice of barbecue sauce? What's your favorite?
I don't know. I like any.
You like them all. Right. And 4 whole wheat buns.
4 whole wheat buns.
So here's how we make it.
I'm going to eat while you're talking.
Spray a skillet with cooking spray. Add the onion, garlic, and green pepper. Saute over medium heat for about 5 minutes. Add a little bit of water if that onion sticks. Then cook the onion until it's translucent. How does it taste?
It looks a lot and smells a lot better than it tastes.
Add the seitan strips. It tastes great. Saute for 1 to 2 minutes. So now it's nice warmed. Add the barbecue sauce and combine, and then cook it, and then put it on the top.
Adam has a whole plate of it here. You can finish the plate if you'd like, Zorba. Oh, don't do that. You don't like this.
I think this is good. Not at all. No. I do like them.
Compared to
what? I'm going to eat the whole plate. No, it really does taste good.
We're happy to send you a copy of this recipe if you really want to try it. Address
Wait
your request.
It tastes good. It's a vegetarian sloppy joe. Try this with your children. Try it. They'll like it. It's low fat. It's a great recipe.
Address your request to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Be sure to enclose a self-addressed, business-size, stamped envelope. We'll send the recipe back to you. I've noticed Zorba has put this aside after raving about it. Any of the really good recipes, Zorba picks up the plate and pours them down into his mouth while I'm giving the address. So you can judge for yourself whether Zorba really thinks this is a delicious recipe. What's that web address?
ZorbaPastor.org.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And Zorba, a listener with us now in Columbus, Georgia. Hi.
Hello, guys. Y'all do a great job.
Aren't you nice? How can we help you?
Well, I just recently turned 60. I'm a white male and had my physical. And my fasting blood sugar was 107. And my physician told me that was elevated. It's now considered high. He suggested lowering my carbs, which I don't eat that many of them anyway, and get more exercise. And my question is, what is the physiology of exercise and having to do with blood sugar levels?
Well, there are a few important points here. First of all, we now know that a normal blood sugar is 99 and less. That's an arbitrary number. We also know a fasting blood sugar above 124 is a diabetic. We used to go through something called the glucose tolerance test, where we had you swallow blood, we had you swallow glucose, checked your blood sugar, and so on. On the whole, we don't do that. We look at blood glucose and then something called the hemoglobin A1C, which is another measurement. So, first question I have with an elevated blood sugar: do you have diabetes in your family?
No.
Okay. So this may be you. This may just be a number that's a little high, but not as risky. If you've got diabetes in the family, it makes you riskier. What's your height? What's your weight?
Well, I should weigh about. I should be about 7 feet tall. I'm 225 pounds, and I'm about 5'11".
Okay, so you're not 7 feet tall, and we're not going to make you any taller. Mm-hmm. But as you get heavier, you develop something called insulin resistance, and that is you've got a certain amount of insulin in your body. The insulin takes the sugar in the bloodstream and pushes it into the muscles so you can do work. That's what it does. So there's sugars all around, and insulin is necessary. It is the vehicle from pushing blood sugar into the cells so they can work. So what happens is you're too heavy, and so your body has developed resistance. The way to break down the resistance is through exercise. Exercise reduces insulin resistance in the body. So does weight loss. And so what we tell people is, look, your blood sugar is elevated. You're at risk for diabetes. Try to trim down 5 or 10 pounds. That can make a huge difference. And do some exercise. Walking exercise, anything which you will move your body can make a big difference and move that blood sugar from the bloodstream into the cells. And that's really how it works. It works at a cellular level, making the insulin more efficient.
Well, I'm going to get right on the program.
Yeah, that really does make a difference. Now, I've got a question for you. Have you tried weight loss at all?
Yes, all the time.
All the time. That's what Mark Twain used to say. I would recommend for your program, do you have arthritis? Can you walk? Do you like walking?
Oh, yes, I'm pretty mobile.
Get a pedometer and walk 10,000 steps a day. 10,000 steps a day, which is roughly 5 miles a day, is what the Europeans do. And there's very good evidence that if you get to that number, 10,000 steps a day, you will eventually reduce insulin resistance. You may trim down a bit and reduce your risk for developing diabetes. So.
Well, I will do that too.
Okay. Good luck with it.
Thank you so much.
Sure. Thank you. We appreciate
the
call. That number again is 800-462-7413. And an Oklahoma City, Oklahoma listener joins in now. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
Well, I'd like to get some good health reasons to give my husband in order to talk him into using the air conditioner this summer in his car.
Oh, he doesn't use the air conditioner?
Well, not nearly as much as I'd like him to. On Thursdays, he drives 80 miles one way and then comes back into town 80 miles and... even though it's scorching hot, he doesn't use the air conditioner very much because he's trying to save gas.
Why does this bother you?
Well, because he has high blood pressure. He's taking blood pressure medicine, and when he gets out of the shower in the morning, it takes him forever and a day to cool off.
Yeah.
And he gets dizzy when he's doing yard work because he says he's too hot.
Oh.
I just think he should... use air conditioner when he's in the car.
Well, you're there in Oklahoma City, which, of course, gets hot in the summer, and so you're worried about his health because he isn't using the AC while he's making his commute.
Right.
Yeah, Zorb.
Uh-huh. Does he have heart failure? Does he have a heart condition besides high blood pressure?
No.
Uh-huh. What have you, I do have, first of all, there's some interesting things. It's very important for people with congestive heart failure who have chronic lung disease to make sure that they're in an air-conditioned area when it's too hot. That's important. A lot of old people die in hot weather. More old people die in hot weather in America than die in cold weather. I mean, we think of cold weather and people dying in the snow, but the fact is Chicago had a heat wave, I think it was 5 years ago, and 1,000 people died in Chicago from the heat wave. And you look at what happened in Paris, France, 2 years ago, it was the same thing. There were a couple thousand people who died.
But
so hot weather kills
old
people.
For those of us who don't have heart problems or anything.
Right, and he does not have heart problems. So then it's a matter of how he functions. And one way you can do it, certainly in an argument, is to say, look, honey, let's measure what your, how much gas do you use driving to and from work. Put the air conditioner on. Do it once. Put the air conditioner off. Do it again. And see what the dollar amount is. I mean, he may say, yes, it takes more. But, I mean, if you want a good argument, why don't you argue how much the dollar
amount? But I'm not clear from what you've said, Zorba, that there is a good health argument.
There is no. I don't think you can give a health argument. I don't think you can do it. He sweats when he's doing the garden, when he's doing the lawn or the garden because he's working. But he's sweating in the car not because he's working but because it's hot in the car. So but I don't think it's doing him any harm at all.
I see. And does it make any difference that he has asthma?
Yes, it does make a difference that he has asthma. Yes, asthma is a good reason to turn on the air conditioning because we know that people with asthma in hot weather, especially if there's pollen around, will tend to wheeze more. So asthma is a good reason to turn it on.
Uh-huh.
Does he smoke at all?
Well, once or twice a year he smokes a pipe.
Oh, once or twice a year. Not that much.
But not back and forth smoking in
no,
the...
No, no, no.
Okay.
Yeah, so is your husband a stubborn person?
Oh my goodness! Wow. Sometimes it seems like it to me, and he acts like the people that he teaches. He teaches family doctors, and I've heard so many stories about doctors not wanting to take their own medical advice. And
he teaches family doctors.
He teaches family doctors.
And now you're calling Zorba for advice to use on your family doc teaching husband. I love it.
Well, I'll do that. But because, see, at home, he always has the air conditioning going in the house.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he makes it colder in the house than I'm comfortable. But he just didn't want to do it in the car. Well, I'll see what I can do.
That takes a little bit of energy and costs a little bit of money.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for your call.
Sure.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. We've discussed my Uncle Dudley plenty of times on this program, Zorba, but never has he received this much support from our listeners. Apparently, his way of making coffee isn't all that unique. Based on the flood of emails we got in our Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. Remember his coffee making thing?
Yeah, didn't he boil the coffee?
Yeah, put the water and the coffee grounds and without the filter thing.
And then boiled it?
Disgusting. Martha in Bozeman, Montana writes, steeping of fresh coffee grounds in hot water without a filter is called cowboy coffee here in Montana. And apparently it's called the same in Missouri, thanks to Doug in St. Louis, Missouri, who says it's the way it was made on the range where they just had a coffee pot, no basket, filters, or any of them thar fancy thingamabobs. And Martha warns, and whatever you do, don't refuse a cup if a cowboy offers you one. It's as taboo as cheating in poker. Especially, I suppose, if the cowboy happens to have a gun.
That's right. That's right. There you go.
So
keep those emails coming, folks.
I noticed no emails on my Uncle Dudley's martini recipe of 2-1.
No, you didn't get any emails of that.
Anyway, thanks a lot. We appreciate hearing from you. With your comments, questions, and tips, just send us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413, the toll-free number. Lots more coming up, including our medical myth buster. Some more interesting research, too, here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. From PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our phone number, 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before we get back to the phones, you mentioned some research suggesting that maybe older brains might not benefit from painkillers.
Well, let's talk about what the studies are that sort of came up to this. The Rotterdam Dementia Study, which started many, many years ago in Rotterdam, Holland, was looking at a variety of things. Nobody had dementia at the beginning of the study, and they were looking at risk factors, and lo and behold, they found that people who took non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs on a regular basis, ibuprofen, diclofenac, another drug common in Europe, and naproxen, basically appeared to have less Alzheimer's disease, significantly less Alzheimer's disease.
And we've talked about that on the show.
We have. We've talked about it numerous times. Now, Celebrex is an anti-inflammatory drug called a COX-2 inhibitor. They started a study a number of years ago and was stopped a few years later to find out whether or not taking Celebrex, naproxen, another drug, which is over-the-counter as a Aleve tablets, or a placebo would make a difference in the reduction of Alzheimer's disease. Well, after 3 years, that study was stopped, and it was stopped because of the side effects of anti-inflammatory drugs. Specifically, we know they increase the risk of heart attacks. And so that study was stopped. But they still followed these people over time and looked at them, and here's what they've discovered. It appears, according to this study, it's a pretty good study, that if you take Aleve, two tablets twice a day, or if you take Celebrex, that there is not a reduction in Alzheimer's disease based on this data if you took it for 3 years.
Not
if you took it for 3 years. The Rotterdam study has been going on now. It's in about its 15th year. And we don't know whether or not you have to take it for 5 years or 7 years or 8 years to actually get the benefits. So if we look at the data, just as this study alone, it's a good study. It's not an observational study. It's a placebo-controlled study. It looks like anti-inflammatories are not the key that we want. On the other hand, if you look at the observational studies, we still say, well, maybe there's a grain of truth. Maybe Celebrex is not the drug that does it. Maybe it's another anti-inflammatory, because in the Rotterdam study, they weren't using that. Or maybe it's got to be taken for longer than 3 years. The study stopped after 3 years.
Now I'm pretty confused. What's the bottom line on this for somebody who's older and concerned?
I think the bottom line is an individual decision between the patient and their doctor. We know anti-inflammatories increase the risk of heart attack. We know that. They all carry a slight increased risk. The Rotterdam study shows there may be a reduction in Alzheimer's disease, but we know there's a very good scientific study that shows this is questionable. So what should you do? I think if you're healthy and you have a strong family history for Alzheimer's disease, the benefit to me is not to get Alzheimer's disease. My mom had it. I'm going to continue taking my two Aleve tablets twice a day. So for me, that's the bottom line.
Our phone number is 800-462-7413. Ann Zorba, our next listener is in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, I wanted to ask first if the mice in the stimulating environment remembered where they put their keys. That's the real test, you know.
No evidence of that that we can find in this research.
Little tiny, tiny mice-sized keys to the cage, I guess.
Yes, but even if they have their keys, where's the car?
Well, that's a good question. Anyway, I have a question about exercise.
Mm-hmm.
First, sort of a happy story. After about 40-plus years of trying to lose weight by dieting and continuing to fail, I decided to try a different approach. And about 9 or 10 months ago, I started exercising, not aerobically, but calisthenics and using hand weights according to this program.
Mm-hmm.
And I lost 14 pounds and 3 inches in my waist in 9 months.
Oh, congratulations.
Wow. Congratulations.
And, well, anyway, I recently wanted to add some aerobics, so I joined this place called Curves, which you've probably heard about.
Oh, sure.
And it's a 30-minute workout, and it's supposed to be 3 times a week, but I've been going 4 times a week. And everybody says how exercise is supposed to give you so much energy, and it's wearing me out. Hmm. And I'm hoping that this will be reversed, but I just wanted to know what's going on here.
Well, it may not be the right exercise for you. I mean, all exercise is not the same to everyone. Now, the first thing that generally happens with exercise is it often does tire us out, and over time, often it gives us energy. So how long, that's my first question, how long have you been exercising at Curves?
Just 3 weeks.
Okay, so that's still within that relatively short amount of time. To begin to develop some fitness is really about 6 to 12 weeks. So you're at the lower end of the curve. It may be that the exercise at Curves, which is a 30-minute program, may just be enough, and it may just simply occur over time, where 6 to 12 weeks from now you'll say, I really do have more energy. But if that doesn't turn out to be the case, then it may be that you want to take up a different type of exercise. Now, we know that aerobic exercise, where you stimulate your heart, you know, to 80% of its capacity for 15 to 20 minutes, does eventually give people energy when they do that, either by bike, by swimming, by jogging, by walking uphill, by stair climbing, whatever they do. We know that that improves that. But it may be that indeed you have to go to a different exercise. But you're still pretty early in this. You know, you're not late in this at all. So I don't think I'd be concerned about it, and I'd probably just keep up with what you're doing.
So when did you say this should turn around approximately?
I would get tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Okay. I'm calling back if it doesn't.
Take 2 aspirin and call me in the morning.
Well,
I would say it about 8 weeks.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to add aerobic exercise, besides the health benefits, is that I go dancing on the weekends.
Oh.
And I wanted to develop more stamina so I didn't have to sit out as many dances. I do swing and salsa and pretty aerobic.
So does that slow you down at all?
I'm not tired while I'm doing it, but when I get home, I'm exhausted.
You know what?
I can't wait for a hot bath. And
you may not like Curves. It may just not be for you. Maybe you're bored. Are you bored there?
Oh, no, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. Okay. It's just my body isn't, I guess, used to all of this aerobic exercise.
Yeah, but if you're out there dancing and you're doing salsa and you can do it, then your aerobic capacity is probably there. Give it another few weeks, seriously. Give it somewhere between 6 to 8 weeks and you'll probably adjust. Because if you're dancing salsa and you're shaking that body, then you're probably getting some reasonable exercise, and this should give you more energy.
Okay, well, I have to go find out where my keys are.
Yeah,
now.
Thanks a lot for calling us.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye. 800-462-7413. Wichita, Kansas now. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
I have been taking 50 micrograms of Synthroid for about 5 weeks,
And I have developed a rash on my left arm, and it went away on its own, and then it came back, and now it's on my wrist, and it's crawling up my hand. And so I didn't know, like, if I needed cortisone or what I should do about that.
And what's Synthroid?
Well, Synthroid is synthetic thyroid medication, and very, very, very doubtful that that's causing the rash. I've never seen a rash with it. You're just basically giving yourself thyroid replacement. The rash is undoubtedly from something else. And what I tell people is, first thing you do is try over-the-counter hydrocortisone, see if that helps your rash. And if it helps your rash, well, then you're there. You know, you don't have to go any further to look for something else that may help your rash. On the other hand, if that doesn't improve, then you have to go see a doctor. It's a difficult thing to figure out rashes on the telephone without seeing them. Have you recently come into contact with any plant material that you might be allergic to?
No. I read, though, that sometimes it's a side effect of the Synthroid to have a rash.
It would be a whole-body rash if that were the case. And it's not a very common side effect, and I think you've got to look towards something else. That would be an unusual rash that you've developed and an unusual side effect. So I don't think it's the Synthroid. I think it's something else. So try the hydrocortisone, look and see what you might be in contact with, and see if that works.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Sure. Thank you very much for calling us. Zorba, let's get to our medical myth buster. Today's myth deals with pregnant mothers suffering from upset stomachs. It's long been thought that an expecting mother with heartburn means her baby can expect a full head of hair. I had never heard this. This sounds ridiculous to me, Zorba. It can't possibly be true. Uh-oh.
Well, I have heard of it, and it turns out that it is absolutely true. Isn't that an odd thing? I mean, an old thing. But what happened was this was research where the researchers did not expect this to happen. It was published in the journal Birth. 64 pregnant women, about 80% of them, roughly 80% of them had some heartburn. After they gave birth, two outside observers looked at pictures of the infants and looked at their level of hair. In other words, how much hair do they have? 28 of the women who reported moderate to severe heartburn, okay, of the 28, 23 had babies with average or above average amount of hair, okay? So in other words, 23 out of 28 women who said they developed moderate to severe heartburn had babies with a lot of hair.
So the hair, excess hair, was giving them heartburn?
Wait a second. Oh, yeah. Conversely, 10 of the 12 women who had no heartburn at all had bald babies.
Yeah, so the hair had some effect on the
So where's the science behind it? And that's exactly what I thought. I thought, how does this make sense? Well, the discussion turned out that high levels of estrogen and other hormones relax the sphincter at the bottom of the esophagus and make that sphincter more likely to allow gastric juice to go up into the esophagus and cause heartburn. High levels of estrogen also go through the placenta into the baby and are more likely to give a baby with a head of hair.
So it's the same cause with two different effects.
So it's the same hormone affecting the mom and the baby. Bingo!
We now have
a scientific basis of the old wives' tale. Yes, get your heartburn, you'll have baby with a lot of hair.
Wow.
That's right.
That's very interesting.
Yes, very interesting.
800-462-7413, the toll-free number. A listener now in Bear Lake, Michigan. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Tom. Hi, Zorba.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, we appreciate it. How can we help?
I had something actually kind of terrible go wrong with my big toe. And I think it's two things that may or may not be related, but they're certainly interacting. And the first is that it started to swell, the back joint up on the foot started to swell maybe a year ago or so. Wasn't causing me any trouble. It doesn't hurt. It just reduces the range of motion a little bit. But about 3 weeks ago, I noticed I call it a floater. There's something in there that moves around, maybe the smaller than a pea. And once in a while, when I put a shoe on or squat down to pick something up, that thing seems to jam up in the joint. And then I can't move my toe at all. It hurts a great deal. But I can push it back out with my thumb. And that doesn't hurt, although it'll make anybody who sees it cringe.
Well, what you may have is a floater in that joint. That may be exactly what you have.
That's the medical term?
And the floater, you bet. And the floater may be a small piece of bone, a bone chip, either because you have arthritis or a previous injury that's going in the joint, or a little piece of cartilage that is essentially, you know, keeping the joint from opening up completely.
Mm-hmm. So, and, that, And I would be able to just push that around?
Well, sometimes you can push it around. There can be other things that are there, too. There are things called tophi. A tophus comes from gout. And that might be an effect. Do you have gout?
I have had gout in that toe before, yes.
It could be a tophus. That could be what's in there. You could have gouty arthritis, and you could either have a little piece of bone in the joint, or you could have a tophus, which is a collection of gout outside of the joint. Could be either one of those two things. Are you on allopurinol to reduce the uric acid in your body?
No, I just take, Indocin when I have a...
Yeah, how often do you get flares?
Oh, maybe once a year.
Once
maybe
a year.
Less.
Well, one treatment is to take allopurinol and reduce the uric acid in your body and see whether or not this goes away. It's probably either a bony chip or a tophus from arthritis, from the gout that you have. So.
Okay.
Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Yep. Let's grab a quick question now, Zorba, before we leave. This one comes to us from Marianne in Clarksville, Tennessee. Marianne would like to know if it's safe to use Preparation H for the bags under your eyes. Now, apparently, she's checking up on a homemade remedy.
I'm sure that it's safe. Preparation H is an emollient cream, and it has little lidocaine in it. I think that would be fine to use. It's funny because we think of Preparation H for hemorrhoids.
It's kind of disgusting.
Yeah. But, I mean, come on, it's a sterile cream when it comes out. As long as you don't touch your butt and then touch your eyes, I think you'll be just fine. I don't think you'll do yourself
any harm. It can't hurt if it got in your eye.
I don't think. Well, you don't want to get it in the eye, but I don't think it'll hurt you if it gets in your eyes. No.
Will it help? Will it, will it,
I don't think I'd put it in the eyes. I don't think it's ever been tested to put into people's eyes.
So you want
to keep it out of your eyes.
No, but I mean, would it help with the bags under the eyes?
How do I know? I'm a doctor.
Well, that's the... Yeah, you're a doctor.
I have no idea.
You're supposed to know all.
Nobody has ever asked me about using Preparation H in your eyes, in your nose, in your mouth. I have the foggiest idea. Maybe it'll work. Try it. See if it works. See if it gets rid of those bags under the eyes. If so, you've got something going, and you can sell more Preparation H.
Sometimes the best remedies are right there in the home. Tell us yours by sending your tip in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Zorba, thank you very much.
A pleasure, and stay well, Tom.
For a copy of this week's recipe and all things Zorba, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
And don't forget, you can bug our producer anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and is produced by Adam Friedrich. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Brad Kohlberg is Madison's biggest brewer fan and our technical director. Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0614Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.